Radio Prague News. The Czech Prime Minister says he wants Britain in the European Union, but says the basic principles, such as freedom of movement, should not be abandoned. The Lower House of Parliament has approved a bill extending support for biofuels, and the police's financial crime unit Cobra has cracked down on more members of the so-called fuel mafia. The Czech Republic wants Britain to remain part of the European Union, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka told the visiting British Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond on Friday. The bilateral talks in Prague focused largely on Britain's demands for EU reform, which would enable it to remain part of the alliance. The Czech Prime Minister said his country was ready for a pragmatic debate on the proposed changes, but stressed that the basic principles of the union, such as freedom of movement and equal rights of EU citizens, should not be abandoned. The Lower House of Parliament has approved a bill extending support for biofuels. The tax benefits, amounting to 9 billion crowns, should be in place until 2020. According to Agriculture Minister Marian Jurečka, the law should help the Czech Republic meet EU requirements in the share of renewables in transport. Failure to do so could result in fines worth billions of crowns, he said. The bill, which still needs to win approval in the Senate and be signed by the President, came under fire from opposition deputies who claim that it benefits the agrochemical group Agrofert, owned by Finance Minister Andrej Babiš. The police's financial crime unit Cobra has cracked down on more members of the so-called fuel mafia, charging 18 people with tax evasion to the tune of 1.4 billion crowns. According to a Cobra spokesman, the organized gang dealt in gasoline and diesel fuels across several European states, with a string of fake companies to cover their tracks. In a number of raids, the police confiscated 30 million crowns in cash. If convicted, the suspects could face up to 10 years in jail. Pensioners should receive a one-off bonus from the state next year to the tune of 1,200 crowns, according to a government proposal approved by the Lower House on Friday. The bonus is to make up for the low valorization of pensions in 2016, which will only amount to 40 crowns per month. The Social Democrats of the ruling coalition, who raised the sum from the proposed 1,000 to 1,200 crowns, said the state could afford to be more generous in view of the healthy state of the economy. Unknown perpetrators vandalized the Brno Mosque on Thursday night, pouring motor oil on the facade and doors of the building, the CTK news agency reported. Security cameras reportedly showed two persons, a man and a woman, pouring something on the walls and door of the mosque before making off. The incident is being investigated by the police. A group of 20 Czech volunteers from the Help Fleeing Refugees Association left for Lesbos on Friday, where they're planning to form a permanent base in aid of refugees coming over from Turkey. They will have boats, diving gear, drones and medical equipment at their disposal. Since the beginning of the year, over 600,000 refugees crossed from Turkey to Greece and over 4,000 of them, including many children, drowned on the way. The Help Fleeing Refugees Association has over 3,200 volunteers, many of whom are assisting refugees along the Balkans route. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The weekend should be partly cloudy with intervals of rain and shine, and day temperatures between 7 and 11 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today we speak to a Prague-based expert about what Aung San Suu Kyi's success in elections in Burma really means for the country. A rock band with hate-filled lyrics looks set to come first in a popular music poll. And we meet a first-time children's author working not with paper, but with fabric. All that's coming up in today's program. On Friday, it became clear that Burma's National League for Democracy, headed by Nobel Prize winner Aung San Suu Kyi, had secured a parliamentary majority and is heading for a landslide victory that will allow it to select the president. But the election victory has not totally sidelined the former military rulers. Chris Johnstone talked with Igor Blazevic, who who has just returned to Prague after several years, helping the political opposition in the country prepare for power.
The election results have been dropping in slowly from Burma or Myanmar's Sunday elections. But on Friday, the country's election commission declared that Aung San Suu Kyi's NLD had secured more than half of the seats in the 664-seat parliament. But to some extent, Aung San Suu Kyi has been here before. Free elections were staged in 1990, but when it was clear her party had won an overwhelming victory, the army generals cancelled the results and continued to rule. Igor Blažević, the co-founder of the Czech One World Film Festival, has just returned to Prague from Burma, where he was helping LND party activists prepare for power. I asked him how likely it was that the military can pull off the same stunt again and ignore the election results.
It's out of the question in the next few months. The military is not now in a position with all the attention, with all international involvement, with a very different world now than it has been in the 90s. So it's out of the question that military will stage the coup in the next few months.
But the military still has its hands on many levers of power. It's guaranteed 25% of the seats in parliament, key ministries such as the interior, borders and defence, and they have already made sure that they control many of the country's key economic assets. Igor Blažević says it's now crucial for Aung San Suu Kyi's victorious party to make sure that the military are really on board as Burma moves towards its first civilian democratic government in more than 50 years.
If there will be no reasonable pact and deal between the military and the government, military can continue to sit behind the fortress of the constitution, which protects the military's autonomy, basically, and then wait till the government fails. If military decides to do that, there are many, many ways to destabilize government through the ongoing civil war, through the communal violence and through other things. So military can easily destabilize the government, and then there is a clause in a constitution that if there is a chaos and instability in a country, military has a constitutional right to take over. So it really depends now on whether there will be a reasonable political deal between the winning NLD and the military.
Igor Blažević, an expert on Burma, ending that report by Chris Johnstone. Now, the annual Český Slavík, or Czech Nightingale, competition is voted on by members of the public and is one of the country's top music prizes. But this year it appears likely to become embroiled in a controversy over immigration. According to preliminary poll results, the controversial band Ortel is currently the front runner in the race to take the gong for most popular band. Ruth Frankova has more.
The song called Meshita or Mosque by the band Ortel is accompanied by a video featuring two masked men pointing a gun at the singer, who clutches a paper with Islamic symbols and signs. The video, reminiscent of Islamic State propaganda, has attracted nearly 2.5 million viewers on YouTube. The highly controversial band, whose hateful lyrics primarily target religious and ethnic minorities, is currently riding high on anti-immigrant sentiments. Last year, the largely unknown band from Plzeň jumped from the 105th spot to 4th place in the same Český Slavík competition. The founder of Ortel, who calls himself Tomáš Ortel, is also the founder of the neo-Nazi band Conflict 88, and Ortel's song Hadr or Rag was once the anthem of the neo-Nazi Workers' Party prior to its forced dissolution on the demand of a Czech court in 2010. But for the organizers of the Český Slavík Awards, these facts are not sufficient reasons in themselves for excluding the band from the competition. Jiří Těšínský is the spokesman for the organizer.
Český Slavík není soutěž, je to anketa.
Český Slavík is not a competition. It is a public poll, and according to the rules, anyone can send their votes to any entrant they choose. So that means we haven't nominated anyone. We have a rule that we do not comment on any entrant or band until the voting is over. It would be unfair.
But in fact, Ortel would not be the first contestant to be excluded from the Český Slavík Awards. In 2013, the organizers excluded the rapper Řezník or Butcher from the Internet Star category, arguing that he uses explicit and inappropriate language and drug references. Last year's Band of the Year, Kabát, received some 31,000 votes, and there is a real possibility that Ortel will gather just about the total this time round. Right-wing journalist Adam Bartoš and the head of a French nationalist party No to Brussels National Democracy, which has around 25,000 Facebook followers, has called on his supporters to send in their votes for Ortel. While the organizers distance themselves from the voting, Jaroslav Těšínský admits that they might step in after the polling has concluded.
After the voting ends, we will evaluate whether it was in line with the regulations, whether there wasn't any organized voting, for instance, and we will also examine whether the singer's texts and other expressions don't infringe the law. So we will definitely do this after the voting ends, and we might intervene if it's appropriate.
The Český Slavík Awards, originally known as Zlatý Slavík, have been running since 1962. This year's winners will be announced at a ceremony in the State Opera House on the 28th of November.
Thank you for that report, Ruth Frankova. And in the final part of our programme today, Jan Wellinger meets a children's books author in this week's edition of The Arts.
The tropical island of Zanzibar is the setting of a beautiful new children's book just released by Labyrinth Raketa. Called Zanzibar Jako Vishiti, the Book of Poems and Stories is the work of first-time children's author Ratka Dračková on maternity leave from her job in film distribution. The text is exceptional, and the illustrations even more so. They are not drawn, but meticulously crafted from fabric. When I met with Ratka this week, we of course talked extensively about the book, but I began by asking her first about her and her husband's love of travel.
It was a passion for us. We have experienced a period where traveling wasn't possible or was very difficult. So when we turned, 18, 20, really felt desire for traveling. And we have traveled to several continents. We have been to Africa several times, South America, Asia, and visited many, many places that are so beautiful and so worth discovering.
Obviously, seeing different cultures, different habits, different customs. Is that something that held an initial attraction for you or a continuing attraction?
Yeah, all of it. And basically we always search for simplicity, authenticity, meet people, experience their everyday life, take their means of transport, these matatu, bemo and so, crowded taxis. And I also always tried to learn at least a conversation minimum of every language. Bahasa Indonesia, I still remember the phrase how to learn when the boat is leaving or so, this practical stuff. We always traveled like for holiday, but once we did a trip to help an NGO, so it was kind of volunteer stay. More than 1 month in West Africa, in Guinea, and it was a very different experience because we really saw very poor people, very poor children that we were helping with sanitary services. This is where you really meet the essence of existence of people there. You travel very far to realize that the country you live is, you are very happy there, lucky.
Now, one place which obviously left a deep impression on you is Zanzibar. That's one of the places you visited, and it formed the basis for your first children's book. When did you first get the idea that you wanted to write a children's book? Is that something that you always wanted to do, but were just waiting for the right moment?
No. I had very strong memories from Zanzibar, and I don't remember exactly the moment, but I still saw some scenes, some characters, people I met there, and it still came again and again to my mind. And then I transformed it in my mind into like rag dolls. So I had an idea of it, and I wanted to see, to really create it. Then I thought, yeah, it could be a children's book.
Did you take the decision to go ahead after, because you have two daughters, did that decision come after you had children of your own?
Before. But I think that the experience I had traveling to Zanzibar, it was like getting back into childhood, because this is something so different that you discover completely new colors, new tastes, new means of communication, or you meet people you don't really understand, and it's like really like discovering for the first time something that is very different of what we are used to. So that's maybe why I imagined it like a topic for children.
One of the very interesting things about your book is that it's not classically illustrated, but that you use fabrics. Each image is sewn from different fabrics. Where did these fabrics come from?
These are old clothes that my husband and I wore when we traveled to Zanzibar, or also some textile clippings that I had at home. I sew, so yeah, I had these fabrics, and I just picked colors that that I liked and had in my mind that are really like real Zanzibar, and put it all together, and that's it.
And then in terms of the process, did you think of different scenes and begin sewing those first and then write the verses or the stories afterwards, or was it a combination?
My first idea was very visual. Actually, the first moment or the first inspiration, it was a memory of a boy, very little boy, like 4 years old, selling donuts on the beach, carrying very like giant dish full of donuts and walking all the way, it's like 7-10 kilometers, this stripe of beach, which is something very moving. He came every day, every morning or twice a day, and this is something that really I will never forget it, and so it's one of the characters that appears in the book. But then I wrote little poems or stories, and always I adapted the illustration to the story. So sometimes it's based on words I've used in the poetry, and it appears like a small motif in the illustration.
I'm glad that you mentioned that particular poem, because it was one of the ones that also sort of jumped off the page for me. And you can hear the waves practically on the beach there, and there's the imagery that I think before you see the boy, what he's carrying in the donuts.
This giant dish.
As a writer, you also employed many different techniques, or as a poet, there are different patterns, there is alliteration. You clearly enjoy playing with words and crafting them, and they really do capture, for me, this kind of essence of a place where I've never been. So I certainly appreciated that as a reader. My question is, how do you enjoy forming this sort of imagery with words?
Well, thank you for what you just said. I must say that someone really helped me. I worked with an editor who is a poet, Ondřej Budeus, and a very appreciated Czech poet. And he helped me very much to put an architecture into what was the first version of the poetry. I would say that the ideas, the meaning, and the mood is the same. But he pushed me to get rhythm and rhymes. He didn't rewrite it, I did.
Yes.
Which was very difficult, because you have to... I had to write for a second time the same idea with a little different words or word order. But it was really necessary, and I'm happy about the result. And it was giant progress.
If we come back to the images and how they are sewn, this is very meticulous work as well. What are the techniques employed?
Yeah, the technique is quite laborious. Not the technique itself, it's called appliqué. So I always made a drawing, then cut characters or animals, and then copy it on a fabric, cut it a little bigger, and then fold the edges and neaten the edges to have it like all clean and well sewn. although the statues can be seen, and it's like I wanted it to look a little like naive and and not haute couture, but like really handmade. And it's because of the scale that it's so laborious, because it's so tiny. And if you have to fold 3 millimeters there, 3 millimeters there, it's really like time consuming, and it it asks a lot of like patience. Mm-hmm.
But it is very original. I can't remember seeing anything similar, perhaps with folded paper, that kind of thing, but not with fabric itself in this sense. And if we talk about the different characters, obviously you have depicted many of the locals. There's a wonderful portrait of your own as well at the back of the book. And there are many different animals, which is wonderful for children. If you just look at the cover, you have a rhino here, a wild cat, elephant. Who's your favorite character, or perhaps more appropriately, your daughter's favorite character?
Yeah, the chameleon, and then my self-portrait, because my daughter, who is 3 years old, she immediately knew that it was her mom. It doesn't matter that my face is green and so, but she recognized me immediately. Yeah, with my daughter, we more look at the pictures now. We read some texts, some of the poems, but I think that it's for children like between 5 and 8 to really like appreciate what or get the message.
Who did the layout for the book? Because it's also very pleasing to look at the division between the text, the number for the story, and so on.
I really like the layout. It was made by Jakub Kaše, so someone that publishing house Labyrinth choose, and I was really happy when I first saw it. I was really delighted.
Otherwise, what was work with Labyrinth like? Because this is one of the best known publishing houses here in the Czech Republic, also with a very specific children's line.
Of course, and I was very lucky. I think I have experienced some kind of American dream. I showed my work to the owner of Labyrinth, Joachim Dvořák, on the street. I went to a book market, open-air market, close to Vltava, and I thought, okay, so now I think my book is finished. I would like to have at least like 30 copies for my friends, but I was too lazy to start a crowdfunding campaign or so. So why not show it to someone, maybe? And yeah, he saw it. He told me, okay, so send me your text. And I think he wasn't very optimistic about it. But finally, I really appreciate his courage, because it was a lot of work from his side and all the team. He's really a brave man.
You had the book launch a few days ago where it was absolutely packed at the cafe where it was launched. What kind of feeling did you have? Is it finally the readers will get to see it?
Well, yeah, I'm happy, but I'm still a little shy, like waiting what people will say about it. And I'm very happy that I have very positive feedback from people who studied art, for example, which is like very unexpected for me.
Your youngest daughter is playing here now on your lap. She's just woken up a few moments ago. So you can make some more noise, Marlene. It's okay. You can tell us something into the microphone if you want, when you feel like it. There you go. Some readers or listeners will be interested to know that you use a pen name, which is close to your real name. But in Czech, your pen name, Dráčková, it means like a dragon, doesn't it? Or
yeah,
of a dragon.
Little dragon. It's a joke. It's shorter than my real name, and I thought that it could be nice for children to have an author with this name. It could maybe awaken their imagination, curiosity.
First-time children's book author Radka Dráčková, ending this week's edition of The Arts with Jan Wellinger. If you have any comments about today's program here on Radio Prague, please do share them with us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook or via Twitter. But that's all for now, folks. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.